Hello, friends, and welcome to the DDP for the 2nd of November. I'm Paul White. I'm continuing today, and I want to jump right in because I had a little bit of intro yesterday that ate up some of my time, and I did a long podcast anyway, but I want to jump in today to this question, a set of questions. One man, one woman sent us different formats, different platforms, but the same general question, which is, can you help explain Paul's teaching on women and their position as leaders in the church? Yesterday, I dealt with the 1 Timothy 2:11-12 passage, where Paul says, let a woman learn in silence with submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. And I'm not going to apologize for Paul. But Paul is teaching in a world in which there is no path to leadership for women. And I think that Paul is holding on to a Jewish formula here and says, I don't permit it. I don't believe Paul is saying the Lord doesn't permit it, but Paul says, I don't permit it. Now, what I asked you to deal with between yesterday's podcast and today was what is a blatant inconsistency in theology. In Galatians 3:28, Paul says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus, and if you're Christ, you're Abraham's seed and your heirs according to the promise. So according to Paul's theology, there should be no distinction between a Jew and a Gentile when it comes to God. There's no distinction between a slave person or a free person when it comes to God. And there's no distinction between male or female. That breaks the religious lines, it breaks the socioeconomic lines, and it breaks the gender line. And Paul's foundation of his everyone can receive from Christ gospel is that trifold statement. No Jews, no Greeks, no slaves, no free, no male nor female. And yet, here's Paul's inconsistencies. Paul says, when I'm around a Jew, I'm Jewish. When I'm around a Greek, I act like a Greek. What about that no Jew or Greek stuff? So Paul's lifestyle still has to line up with Paul's theology. Paul teaches slaves in Corinthians, if you came to Christ as a slave, don't seek to be free. Let every man continue wherever he is. In other words, don't look for liberation from slavery. Just accept it. It's your lot in life. And yet, in Galatians, there's no slave, no free. In Galatians, there's no male nor female. And yet, Paul says, I don't want to see a woman teaching. So we need to deal with the fact that Paul had his theology squarely rooted in an equality of all, ground level at the foot of the cross, a gospel that sees each person in the same light. But Paul had his practice in a Jewish world he struggles to shake. And no New Testament writer does more to liberate us from the shackles of the law than Paul, who says that you can't seek to be justified by the works of the law, who says that all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient, who says that you're not justified by your works, but you're justified by faith. Nobody does more than Paul. But we do need to accept that there are still parts of Paul's theology that are bound within the context or the framework of his day. Now, I want to deal with another one, because there are moments in Paul's teaching that are straight up confusing based upon the language that he uses. I want to take you to 1 Corinthians 11. And in that passage, beginning in verse 2, Paul says, I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things. Keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you. There's a weird one. The fact that Paul says, keep the traditions as I delivered them to you. And yet Paul actually preaches against the traditions of men in his short epistles to the churches. That the epistles of men, or the traditions of men rather, are binding and have bound up God's people and should be abandoned. And so it's interesting that Paul returns to this idea of keeping tradition when it's the traditions of men that have put man, or put the religious mindset of man, under such a bondage for so long. Verse 3, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of every woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for there's one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. If a woman is it's shameful for her to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. Look down at verse 10. This is the reason a woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. This is a back and forth, almost mishmash of teaching on women head coverings and why they need this. Now let me stay on this for a second, and I'm going to shore this up with my thoughts and feelings on how we should handle Paul's leadership lessons about women. I want to read from you from a very wise writer. I've been reading from David Bentley Hart's New Testament. David Bentley Hart is an Eastern Orthodox scholar of religion and philosopher. He's one of the most advanced Greek studies minds in the world today. And he has recently, as of early 2020, written a word-for-word translation of the Greek. I want to read his footnotes, if I could. It's one paragraph long from his 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians, verses 2 through like verse 16. Paul is addressing a situation that had evidently arisen specifically in the church of Corinth, where certain women, when publicly praying or prophesying in the assembly, removed their cover from their heads and exposed their hair. There have been many elaborate discussions of these verses, but both the issue and the energy with which Paul addresses it may be easily understood if one recall that he belonged to a culture of extreme modesty in which a woman's full and lustrous head of hair was regarded as among the chief beauties of her sex. Hence, a woman's uncovered head in public, and especially in places of worship, was seen both as an ostentation and as an ill-mannered provocation, rather as today, immodest dress is discouraged in many places of worship. Paul's long symbolic justifications for demanding more traditional behavior from Corinthian Christian women are notoriously torturous and at times obscure, and his arguments from marital hierarchy, hardly a contentious issue in an age when, in addition to the force of universal cultural custom, society was unpoliced, households lived by a labor economy, and young girls were married to fully grown men, they are no sooner introduced than they disintegrate in the solvent of his quite remarkable sexual egalitarianism. Finally, he's forced to appeal instead to a natural sense of propriety and seemliness, and his anxieties become quite clear when he explains that whereas a man adorns his head with a wraparound covering and so should remove it in order to approach God in humility, a woman's adornment is a natural endowment that cannot be removed and so should be covered if she is to humble herself before God. So I wanted to give a wise answer to that in regards to the context of his time. I also want to make a comment about the let women in the assemblies be silent from 1 Corinthians 14. It's a contextual problem, a textual problem, because it appears to be an interpolation. It appears to be an addition late, maybe by whoever added what we read in 1 Timothy. I wanted to throw that in because I think it's necessary. Now, with that said, I want to say this. I believe that the teachings of the book of Acts make it rather clear that women held a place in the first century church of teaching in Christian circles. The most famous story is Apollos' conversion at the home of Priscilla and Aquila, a husband and wife duo who were teaching the gospel of grace in their home. Paul even lists female apostles in the 16th chapter of Romans. So once again, the New Testament shows us the lofty position of the liberated female. Paul shows us a man struggling against the concept of women in leadership due to his Jewish nature, but yet lays out a foundation of hope. I say this, Paul doesn't liberate the slave and even ends his writings by telling them to just be content as slaves, and yet none of us agree that slavery is okay. Paul ends his writings not fully liberating a woman publicly, and yet the teachings of the New Covenant show us that there's no difference in male or female. Take that for what it's worth. Wrestle with it. It's worth the wrestle. At least the next two podcasts will deal with listener questions regarding Old Testament stories through a New Covenant lens. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless.